Oh, this is Jason Devereaux. You're listening to, oh, pardon me. You're listening. Everybody says, oh, you've got to be really professional. That's really important. And you go, yeah, you know, I'm sure that's true. Anyway, you're listening to Cohen Lone Wolf Saint here. Listening to a general conference talk, and I've got to be honest, I don't know what to think of the abandonment of the concept of respectability. When I was a kid, respect was something you earned. Your parents, your grandparents, especially when you were a kid, a child. I've got so many people who say, don't call your children kids. You go, I don't understand what the problem is with that. But apparently it's a huge thing. You had to earn the respect of your elders. In a lot of ways, this is how culture was transmitted. I think myself. And it's just been in the last, it's been ever since the whole thing about self-esteem. Everything kind of went kablooey in the late 60s and early 70s. And one of the things that went was that everybody, everything deserved respect. And I think this has been way too conflated with just being decent, being able to treat a homeless person, your enemy in war, as for examples, as people. Of course, now we've so conflated what must be done for people that it's becoming really untenable. And it mostly has to do with these changing attitudes. And I think for the most part, it's going in the wrong direction. That what we need to agree upon are common standards of decency, which is you don't drive people out in the streets, you don't, like, render them homeless. You don't do that. And, it's really a hard subject to talk about because the speech of everybody has become so, we used to call it being politically correct. It's far beyond that now. It's like George Orwell's 1984 newspeak, where we're trying to get rid of a whole brand of talk due to whatever. We did start a new job, so we're going through all of the corporate training that's required to kind of get you into the corporate culture. You're allowed to have a corporate culture. In fact, if you don't have a corporate culture, you're in horrible shape and you need to do that. Now, if you come from your own personal culture, a lot of that has to be abandoned in meeting the corporate culture. And I have to say, I'm not very excited by any of this. Now, I'm compliant because I'm a pretty compliant guy. And we had the sexual harassment training, which sounded to me like just a slightly lighter form of diversity training, which is mostly, this is what you can't do because it's offensive to other people. And I've never been a proponent of any of this stuff. In fact, I used to very much teach against it when I was a trainer for child care providers. I don't know if it was one of the early places. It was called the anti-bias curriculum back in the day. And it was mostly about, oh, don't call Christmas Christmas. You know, call it the winter holiday season. You know, in fact, the term holidays was starting to get a little suspect because that's just a derivation of holy day. And to be holy is really offensive to some people. And it's almost getting that way in that they can't tolerate that in the home or in the family. And that's really sad because that means that certain people's attitudes have to always win the day. Oh, you can't offend me. And you go, but you know what? You're actually offending me. At some point, we just need to sit down and say, you know what? You believe your way. I believe my way. And we got to learn how to deal with each other and not be so thin-skinned. And that really, I think, has been the great problem is that it is dictatorship through thin-skinnedness. And the more thin-skinned you are, apparently the more superior you are. Don't say this, don't say that, don't talk like this, don't talk like that. And I found out this sexual discrimination training that we had, that it really ends up being that different cultures really can't live together. I don't think there's been some talk recently about the fact that diversity, for all its vaunted whatever it is, really isn't particularly useful or good when somebody from the South calls you darling, darling, because that's just the way they talk down there, and your biggest crusade is to get them to stop talking like that because, oh my gosh, that demeans you. I don't really know what to think of that. Southern culture's inappropriate. It must be rooted out and destroyed. And it's like, wow, I can already see this coming. This smells of carpetbaggers. The old concept of Northerners coming down to the South and trying to turn the South into basically the North of the United States. It's like the Californians coming out to Grady, New Mexico and telling them that they can't shoot coyotes anymore because when I came from California, that was one of the things that really made me excited about New Mexico was the fact that I'd be able to hear the coyotes at night. I didn't want to hear gunshots and stuff like that. Not just trying, you know, and they go, well, this is little stuff. You can do this to be more accommodating of the California mentality. Come on. You can do that. You go, you do know that coyotes are a huge problem for ranchers. They chase down and kill young calves. And a rancher lives off the fact that as many calves as they get, they can raise up to be cattle, full-sized, and sell them. That's the nature of the thing. Now, I'm sure there's some California attitudes about, well, we don't really like beef either. And you're going, you know what? Nobody appreciates you coming here and changing the culture here. Now, everything's in flux. Everything, you know, everything changes. There was big wars between sheep and cattle early on, and ultimately the cattle won. You know, that's just, and you go, you know, and at what point do we stop this thing? And so it is. It's like, you know, I don't know what to do with it all. When do we go too far? And I've never come to a good resolution about that. When we talk about respect, for instance, we used to call it cultural competence. You would have to understand other people's cultures and be able to function with them. The attitude that everybody had to stop being what their culture was and join some universal, bland thing, with every culture pretty much trying, or every, they're really anti-cultures. With every anti-culture, and I feel like I was really imbued with this young. I don't know if it was the schools. I don't think it was really my parents particularly. I'm not willing to blame them for it. Anti-culture, which is you aren't allowed to have a culture at all. Some kind of middle of the road nothingness where I'm sorry, we can hardly speak to each other because anything you say is going to offend somebody else. And this keeps expanding and expanding and expanding. And I'd really like to go back to the old respectability. Certain modes of behavior that worked where you went. Certain attitudes that could hold sway in a region. When you, in my part of the world, when you, especially on a back road, when you passed someone in your car, you would wave at them. And people who didn't know would ask you. They'd say, do you know that guy? And you go, no, not particularly. And you go, but you waved at him like you did. And you go, yeah, it's just nice. People like feeling, you know, being waved at. That's just what we do. And I've noticed over the years that's less and less and less. And it's sad. It's a sad commentary on the fact that we let too many outside people dictate what's appropriate in our lives. And instead of just being courteous, which used to be a virtue, trying to figure out what greeting is makes somebody else feel good, how to say good morning in other languages without feeling like that you have to. I think schools did us a real disservice that way in saying that if you didn't start the morning saying, I don't know how you say good morning in Spanish anymore. That's terrible. But if you didn't say most of the things you were saying in both English and Spanish, you were offending somebody, and making it kind of a rule. And if you didn't, you know, accommodate the Spanish appropriately, you were a bad person. I don't know when that settled ship came. Like I said, I think it was in the 70s. I really do. And we needed to, you know, and it became rules. Hard and fast rules. You had to spend as much time trying to inject Spanish culture as you were supposed to be understanding your own culture, whatever culture that may be. I tried to get it down to the point to where it was a family thing. Of course, families are now being torn apart by different things. My own family being torn asunder by transgenderism, which I consider to be a plague over the land. And all these demands that you better treat them this way and you better treat them that way. And it's like, I'm sorry. It seems a little made up to me. It's a contrived culture. It does not come from a region particularly, although it certainly has caught hold in different regions. But yeah, it said, you know, it says, and we seem to offer it the same kind of, quote, respect that we give to ethnicity or race. And of course, everybody says, we don't need to be so divisive. And you go, I'm sorry, the people who demand respect, this is all these things that we tout has been turned upside down and now is used as a baseball bat, as a cricket bat to bludgeon people for non-compliance. And I am really quite, every time I hear like somebody like who's the fellow? Oh my gosh. Morgan Freeman, there it is. Every time I hear Morgan Freeman talk about these kinds of things, I kind of cheer inside. I cheer outside, too, about his fact that you know, he doesn't like the whole concept of Black History. He says, we get a whole month for Black History. Where's White History Month? And they go, we don't have it. And you go, oh. He goes, why not? I don't know. We just don't. He says, well, then there shouldn't be a Black History Month. And you're going, yeah. And he goes, can't we treat people just decently? Knowing that we come from different backgrounds. Knowing that, for instance, the United States, it isn't a big melting pot. I know some people, that was probably the first attempt at homogenization that I'm glad really hasn't worked very well. Because we are a pluralistic society, a lot of different cultures, a lot of different races can find ways to live together in peace. I'm a classical liberal. That means that I think that a lot of things should be live and let live. Whether I want to be discriminatory against other people for some reason is something that I don't think should really be a thing. I think people should be able to live out their culture as they wish as long as it doesn't get in the way of other people doing what they would like to do. Rich people like living amongst rich people. Different enclaves used to exist that felt like home to many other cultures. You know, there used to be a German section of town. There's still Chinatowns everywhere. And you go there and you can't read the signs because they're in Chinese. You can't, everything behaves differently. Difficult to enforce a lot of culturally dominant laws in those places because people just don't keep those rules. And I personally don't have a problem with, at least the United States, enclaves that behave in different ways that honor other people. Right now, there is currently an Israeli-Gaza conflict. Now, this thing has been going on for so many years, we can't even remember how it really started, where it really began from, who's really who has a superior claim, we don't know. Right now, the Israelis control the region, and they got that control through war. There's another group, the Palestinians, that want to control this region and want it to behave the way they would like it to behave. I'm sorry, I've got a Jewish background, so I've got certain loyalties, proclivities of some nature that put me on one side of that conflict. Is there a right or wrong? That's hard to say. My biggest thing about that is the Hamas-Palestinian cluster does not govern itself and will not tolerate outside governance. And trying to live side by side with it, as the Israelis have, it's probably reluctantly accepted the fact that they've always kind of been a stranger in a strange land, but this land was given to them by God, and I can't but think that God has helped them to reacquire it. And it's hard to see what's right and what's wrong. You know, it's just like transgender people trying to take over other things, other institutions. They've certainly taken over the academy. And there's kind of a no holds barred sort of attitude about it. Just like there is amongst Palestinians and Israelis. Israel, I think, is at least decent by saying, and that's why I say decent, in that, you know, there's conquered land. Israel gave part of it back for a place for the Palestinians to live. And the Palestinian place is an ungovernable mess, and terrorism reigns supreme. But this last conflation of the ongoing, I think it's a war that has been ended. Because Israel didn't just simply conquer and drive out the people and it really is somewhat against their religious thought among Jews for them to do that. Now, the religion, I'm sorry, I'm, you know, this is an interpretation. The religion of Islam seems to have not a problem with a kind of cultural purity within Islam, and they don't feel this great need to coexist, which somewhat drives the sending of rockets over to harass another country. And my whole thing was, hey, if you guys see, it comes back around to the whole thing of respect. You know, the prevailing idea now is that we have to respect everybody no matter how they behave, no matter what they do. I don't agree with that. There's certain standards that neighbors have to keep. You can't just make your neighbor's life miserable and turn that into a, you know, well, you have to treat me this way. And you go, I think there's a fence here. And on my side of the fence, the way I want things to go held sway. And on your side of the fence is the way you want things to be. And we respect and honor that fence, and we don't violate it without, you know, without talking amongst each other how that's going to go and how that's going to look and come to some kind of an agreement. Well, that hasn't happened with the Palestinians and the Israelis. I think the Israelis have made good attempts over the years. I think the Palestinians are not putting forth an effort. You know what would make everybody feel about a billion times better is if the Palestinians hunted down Hamas and showed the world that they could handle, they could they could exercise some control over their more radical factions, so that Israel doesn't feel the need to go tromping into their territory, taking care of the problem themselves, and making the Palestinians all mad. How dare you come into our space? And you go, because you guys don't control you don't control Hamas. You don't keep them from just launching weapons into our country. Ugh. Come on, guys. You don't do that. That's why they say, oh, there's a war. Well, yeah, Israel considers a war, but they better behave better. The kind of warfare, which is not warfare, which suits us, which basically means Hamas has plenty of places to hide and you can't solve the problem. Israel's trying to solve a problem that Palestine won't fix. And it's about being neighborly. Nobody's asking them to change. Nobody's telling them that they have to convert and become Jews. Jews don't want Palestinians to convert. You know, it's just not part of their mantra. Islam is very much the other way. You must convert to our way of thinking, or you are either, you know, a bad person, kind of an untouchable, and you're just, you know, or you're gonna die. I don't know how many people actually die from this. I don't think Islam really is doing that. But they seem to have a culture that's perfectly willing to do so. All of the talk of ruling the land from the river to the sea, which we've been hearing just a little bit, I hope, and I hope that's not a big thing, is it's genocidal to Jews in Israel. Of course, you can tell day long, well, war isn't the modern way of of acquiring land, stuff like that, to go, well, what other way is there? Israel was established by, can I be honest, the overseers, the United Nations, the conquered lands of the Ottoman Empire, surrounding Arabs, went to war almost immediately against the Jews to dispossess Israel. And Israel won. Israel won miraculously. Anyway, so and it just has to do with, I prefer the term, a different term besides respect, because I'm sorry, I come from a culture that one has to earn respectability. I don't think the Palestinians have particularly earned respectability over the years. And you can say, well, it's because Israel won't allow it. And you go, I don't know. I don't know. Israel has given up a lot to them in the name of peaceful relations and seen those frankly big concessions not do anything. And it's like, what do you do? So do you give more land to them when they behave like this? Lob a couple of bombs and get some more stuff. That seems to be the predominant idea in our modern world, is that's how this should really kind of go. Thank you. And so, yeah, same thing's true with these aggrieved groups, gays, transgenders, groups like this, where they say, hey, we're a culture. And you go, you guys are not a culture. And you go, well, we're going to develop one. And you go, well, okay. It seems like, at least for my part, I'm always on the side that needs to capitulate or be crushed. And you go, well, because you're part of the dominant culture. And you go, no, I'm not. I am a British Jew or a Jewish Breton, something along those lines. I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is a majority nothing, except in Utah. Golly. There's really nothing about me that says, oh, well, you're a privileged person. And you go, I appear white, and a lot of people think there's a lot of unfair or unjust, I don't know, privilege that comes from this. That's kind of a new concept, I think. I've just been to Scotland and Ireland, and Scotland and Ireland are not particularly well liked in on a lot of fronts. When the Irish came over to the United States, they weren't treated well at all. Things change. Now everybody has kind of fun with either a Jewish ancestry that they have or that they wish they had, which is kind of interesting to look at. All of a sudden, the Irish became a little more respectable, and it really comes with a person from a group deciding that they're going to be respectable. Most bad thoughts about different groups, based on whatever they are, ethnicity, racial groups, whatever, comes from the fact that they are that they can't live with others. They are lawless or things like that. people had an attitude about Irish. They said, oh, well, they're indolent. They're likely to steal, you know, and you, business establishment would tell them no Irish because of the attitude that a lot of people had about the Irish. So the Irish started doing their own things. There's a lot of Irish pubs. That was because the Irish decided they would have their own things. I don't know if they had Irish grocery stores, probably did. And as they started coming into the, you know, other people would start coming to the Irish store. And if they were treated decently, they got, you know, the decentness started spreading around. I love decency. And, you know, our system's actually pretty good for letting enclaves get to the point to where they can have some political power. Now, there's going to be some problems when Latter-day Saints moved into an area and moved in such numbers that they started to become a political force to be reckoned with. Local people would get weird. We used to call them the Missourians. And they were very difficult to deal with because they were very, you know, it was very much, you need to get out of here or we're going to kill you. And that's how the way it was for a long time. And so it was a choice. And boy, let me tell you, it wasn't just the threat. No, they were killing people. Getting together mobs, going out and killing people because they didn't want these people around. And even though America was set up as being somewhat pluralistic, it just didn't seem to apply to Mormons. You know, they didn't like having Mormons around. The worst that they were doing was getting people to join that church and making more decent people out of them. You know, it's like you can be really bigoted and you can try to give your attitude about why you're so bigoted. And I've come to the realization that everybody's going to be bigoted against members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It's just always the way it's going to be. And it doesn't matter how much you think that these things are acceptable, that you've been integrated, that everybody thinks okay of you. The vast majority of people don't. And is there a shadow in the face of forced diversity, which I think is hilarious, because it doesn't allow for much diversity at all. You know, my behavior is unacceptable. Your behavior rules the day. And you go, that doesn't sound diverse. I don't know why you use that term. It's mostly a term used by aggrieved groups to get whatever they want. And the fact that, say, for instance, Latter-day Saints are taught and instructed and have a culture that you don't behave that way, we end up being the losers in all these things. And we always look bad. Anyway, so I don't need to go on and on about this. This is about done. The difference between respect and respectability, and it's really sad because I liked it when it was just a word, you know. One was kind of a synonym or a adjective or an adverb. I don't really get into the parts of the English grammar anymore. I used to. But I've got limited capacity. There's only so much stuff I can have in the old kibasa. I did a Spanish word for the melon, my head. And so some things have to go out. And, yeah, I don't choose to give up space for the modern term of respect. I still think you have to earn respectability as whatever you are, that you don't treat people in a nasty way that turns them into a villain. Certain black groups do a big job of vilifying everybody across the board unless they behave in a way that they find acceptable. Marxism has really become, you know, a standard for oppression. We're going to decide what's appropriate, and you're going to have to live by it whether you like it or not. And it's like, well, we're not being good neighbors. You're not being a good neighbor. I'm sorry. That's the first thing I say to any group that tries to force another group to abandon their culture is you're not being a good neighbor. I'm sorry. The Palestinians are not being a good neighbor. The Israelis want to live and they want to exist. And they fought a war to make it so that they would be left alone. It wasn't a war, I think, that they brought on. It was definitely a war that was, we need to crush this. The Arabs need to come and crush these people. And Israel fought back. How dare they? And anyway, but you know, it goes for all of this, all these things that kind of go this way. Decency, neighborliness. I love these virtues over a universal respect because it's being used too much to make demands and dictate. And that's bad. I don't like it. Everybody in the United States that's earned respectability by being respectable. The sad part is, like, say, for the blacks, great inroads are being made toward respectability. Still a lot of wonderful people of a black skin who are respectable. And I think our society, the larger society, at least the way it was, honored that and rewarded that. And those people could get better things happening. They could say, well, it wasn't nice. I came from a bad place of a lot of discrimination. And you go, okay. He says, well, what did you choose to do about it? There was a Martin Luther King thing. There was Malcolm X, who was really about, we need to, you know, if we don't want to be treated badly, we got to clean ourselves up. We've got to do a better job of a lot of things. And I think those were good movements in their day. Have they gotten weird? Yes, as things inevitably will. Sadly, as a group, I think, well, I'm not going to say it. Anyway, respectability. If you want to be treated with more respect, you got to be respectable. Not by going out and making everybody else's life miserable, launching what I would consider to be cultural bombs everywhere. It says that isn't going to buy you respect. I don't respect that. And when you start behaving like that, you don't get respect. You know, you get maybe even put into jail or sent out of decent places as a group. And you go, why are you treating us like a group? And you go, because you're acting like a group. And when your group doesn't act decent and neighborly to others that don't agree with you, then you get what you get. Anyway, okay. It's more than time to stop this. And this is gonna be a kept episode. So many times I'll get into something and I'll get upset and I'll say something that I don't want to say. And then I can't use that audio. I think I did decently on this one, not to go too far. So I'm going to go ahead and let it go. So this is, I need to announce what this is. This is Cohen, Lone Wolf, Latter-day Saint. Still living in the boat, although the boat isn't necessarily in the wilderness anymore. It's now somewhere in an undisclosed location in Amarillo, Texas, not too far from where I'm working right now. Let me leave you with the blessing of my fathers, the priests. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance to you and give you peace.